Hi, folks. So I have been thinking quite a lot lately about the role that technology plays in our lives. Obviously, you have probably picked up on this if you have listened to previous April casts. But I was thinking of a particular paradigm over the past few days about where we lose our autonomy to technology. And I don't really know where this line is drawn, where we operate a machine to do a task versus the machine does the task for us. If you were to get into a car and drive from A to B, you would use that terminology. I got in a car and I drove from A to B. But if you were using a self-driving car, at that point, would you say, I got in my car, which then drove me from A to B? Because I don't see you as driving a self-driving car. That self-driving car is being driven. Or I took my car rather than I drove my car. The verb changes there. You don't say I took the train from A to B. I didn't, drive the train from A to B. And this is an interesting distinction because one is an active activity and one is, one is an active experience and another is a passive one. And I'm always very interested to understand how technology changes us as people. We are obviously very dependent on technology in very, down-to-earth, meaningful ways. For example, I wear glasses. My eyesight would be deeply impeded if I were to live in a world where glasses had not yet been invented. When I was younger, I had appendicitis, and I needed my appendicitis removed, which is a routine operation these days, but go back 100 years and I would most likely have been dead. It's remarkable that I was born at just the right point where I had the medical technology was there to save me. I mean, I say remarkable, yeah, like in any other world, I would have died at a young age and life and the world would have moved on. So it would very much be arguing against my interest to take too much of a Luddite stance. But I also can't help but feel that reliance on technology isn't necessarily always a good thing when it can be avoided. But I don't also feel, and a lot of this is a more of a gut instinct thing, right? I'm not necessarily following strict trains of path and logic here, but over time, of course, technology has made us more and more dependent on it. And as Drew said, like the second the first monkey picked up the first pointed stick, we became we were on the path of becoming cybernetic beings. And he's not wrong in that instance. Of course, the society we live in at the moment is not sustainable. And within our generation, or at least my generation, or within the next few decades, this century, big changes will come by hook or by crook. And knowing the human race as well as I do, which is probably as best as any of you guys know, we're going to leave everything to the last minute and we're going to be reactive instead of proactive. That just seems to be the way that human society operates. And we can say that's a bad thing, we can say that's a good thing, but fundamentally speaking, it just seems like a thing for the most part. I could be wrong, but again, it just seems like that's the way that systems unfold. It's like with capitalism, wealth seems to naturally want to centralize. And it seems that the ultimate end goal of capitalism, if no other influence impedes it, is to centralize to the point where like one person has all the wealth, where the best person at capitalism becomes, top capitalist. And by extension, king, emperor, whatever you want to call it, right? The central, the person that sort of come out on top on society. Your William the Conqueror type of, Attila the Hun. The place where power, in a capitalist society, money is probably the most meaningful measure of power, but I could be wrong. We could still, revert to the all power is ultimately derived from force, and this is why states will always ultimately have the power over even the wealthiest of corporations and individuals. But when you have a system where campaign finance allows wealthy people to fundamentally control who's in power, then I suppose lines kind of get muddled. But anyway, that's a little bit besides the point. I am reminded of an old textbook. It was a journal from a headmaster from probably the best part of 100 years ago, if I remember correctly. And this headmaster was lamenting the introduction of exercise books for children, that children would write in little notebooks what they learned, and they would you know, remember, you know, instead of having to remember stuff, they would be able to write stuff down in these little books. And the headmaster was you know, very critical of this idea of bringing this new technology into the classroom. He preferred the good old-fashioned chalk and slate, because then children would have to remember what they learned. They couldn't just rely on books that were written down. And it seems to be somewhat of a metaphor for a lot of modern-day technology. I am reminded when I was growing up at school that teachers would ever say, well, you're not going to walk around with a calculator in your pocket every day, so that's why you got to learn how to do mental arithmetic. And of course, with smartphones and even dumb phones, even the Nokia 3310 has a calculator, which can do basic arithmetic better than most people. Does that mean that basic arithmetic now is no longer a skill worth learning? Does it mean that cursive is no longer a skill worth learning when everyone seems to be typing rather than writing by hand? I don't know, and I don't know if I, you know, like it, but I also don't know if the reason I don't know if I like it stems from the fact that the world that I learnt is not the world that I currently exist in, and whether or not this is just perhaps a symptom of getting old, whether or not that technology is fundamentally the future. Maybe keyboards or even voice activated smart gadgets might be the way forward. Maybe it might not even be the case, you know, there might become a time even within my lifetime that typing on a keyboard might become old-fashioned, where we spend our user experience on computers just talking to them and it just dictates everything that we say. That would be remarkable. It would be highly efficient. It would also mean that a lot of skills I learned throughout my life would probably become redundant. It would also mean that computers and the decisions about technology were taken away from me for the sake of efficiency, in some cases my own good. You know, but it would also mean that the computers would be very much on rails, that I would not have the ability to tinker and play with computers and even understand them. A lot of course, is the voice-activated assistants that we see today. I believe the majority of their computing power is fundamentally done from central servers. And we are no longer, you know, using computers as we understand them. I know people who have an Alexa and a smartphone and basically do all of their computing through those devices. They may never touch a keyboard again, which I find to be remarkable. And I feel like I'm losing control and I'm losing autonomy and I'm losing the ability to make decisions about my own life, because it feels that technology is centralizing to the point where we will not be choosing technology, we will just be all speaking to voice assistants at some point, or speaking to our smartphones. And that's interesting. Many people, most people will probably not consider this a bad thing, or they'll probably not even question it, that all computers that we've come to expect are no longer being produced by various different corporations, but it all just comes from the hand of Amazon or the hand of Google. I'm sure many people listening to this will not consider this to be a pleasant world to live in, but I can't help but think of it as inevitable. I know someone who has an Alexa, and it's very useful for them. They use it for timing, they use it for playing songs, they use it for asking questions. And that's very interesting. It's very interesting, for example, to say, you know, what is the capital of France? Only, you know, when you just ask Alexa, Alexa, what's the capital of France? It will give you the answer. Does that now mean that you never have to learn a capital again? I mean, I often wonder, like, is the fact that knowledge is becoming so much more readily available to us, is that devaluing knowledge that we have as people? Are we as people fundamentally becoming, you know, slim clients to Google and Amazon and the World Wide Web and the internet at large? It, in some ways, it kind of feels like that, or it certainly feels like it might trend in that direction. That, you know, whereas we never need to remember stuff because now we can write it down, but then the technology seems to move forward and forward and forward to the point where we don't even need to think anymore. Because if we have a question, if we require any knowledge, we just ask Alexa. We just ask Google Home. We just ask Siri or Cortana. Is that still a thing? And it seems that we get to the point where we are no longer thinking, but we are being thought for, in the same way that we are no longer driving cars, but will at some point in the future be driven by them. Unfortunately, it seems that the argument I'm making is not correct, and it somewhat stands in the way of progress, which kind of makes me think that I'm a curmudgeon. But, and I guess my argument is perhaps one of an emotional one or one of a spiritual one. That I feel that the more we depend on machines, the less autonomous we are. I don't feel autonomous when I live in a society that requires me to drive places to survive. I live in a somewhat rural area, and for the most of my life I've been able to walk to all of the places that I've needed to survive for the most part. And for places I can't, I've been able to get a bus. I've picked up a car since I became a journalist, for obvious reasons. Journalists do kind of need to travel, but it has got me thinking that if you're in a situation where you need a car to survive outside of perhaps your job, that perhaps is a symptom of a society that is also, you know, requiring us to use cars that, again, I don't think is necessarily a good thing. Cars as a luxury item, I think, is different than cars as a necessity. For starters, there are a lot of taxes that you pay on cars, and in the UK at least, you're not supposed to pay taxes on things that are a necessity. If you were to, for example, be on benefits, or as Americans like to call it, welfare, you would not be expected to maintain a car on the allowance given to you by benefits. It is not considered something necessarily essential. But if you live in a rural place and, you know, your employment is, or your status of employment can be quite severely affected by whether or not you own a car. Another piece of technology that I don't think is a good thing that we've landed up relying on. But I don't necessarily see a logical set of conditions as to whether a technology is making us stronger or it's helping us become weaker. Whether or not, you know, because we are dependent on technology, we're dependent on medical technology. In the case of medical technology, of course, if you don't use it, you die, or at least your quality of life is substantially poorer. And one of the things that I enjoy about my country and how it works is that we have something called the NHS, the National Health Service, which means that no matter how poor you are, or no matter what unfortunate condition you find yourself in, you will always have access to professional medical care. And that, to me, is incredibly important on a number of levels, not just on the practical, but also I think it very much defines us as a society. It defines Britain in its place as part of the world. And I think that the NHS is a real point of pride for us. And I think that most people, at least in Britain, agree with me on that one. And it's, and the NHS fundamentally at its core is providing incredibly important technology to as many people as possible. And I think that is important. I also think one of the big advantages of the internet and the World Wide Web is that it has allowed more people to access more knowledge. And that is, I believe, a firmly good thing. I've learned a lot of things from the internet. Most of my, almost all of my technical knowledge comes from the internet. I'm pretty much almost entirely self-taught on that kind of thing. And I know many people who also use the internet to educate themselves. I am very confident that the internet has made me a more intelligent person and by extension has given me positive characteristics beyond that, which I'm very glad about. And I believe that I am not an edge case. It has provided us a tool that I believe is very powerful. Where, you know, throughout history, knowledge was considered a very privileged thing. It would be often the case that the only person in a village or town that could read would be your local vicar. And let's not, of course, forget that one of the core tenets of the free software movement is to allow people willing to learn the ability to grow their knowledge base when it comes to technology. If it wasn't for the free software movement, I'd know a lot less about technology because there would be a lot of avenues closed off to me because I just couldn't afford to use a lot of proprietary technology, software and hardware. Linux itself actually allowed me to take computers that no one would otherwise use and actually restore them. And that gave me an opportunity to learn about them and how they worked. And then, you know, it sort of rolled into a YouTube channel and I became part of a very wide and broad community that I'm incredibly grateful to be a part of. And I think that's wonderful. And one of my great heroes, Aaron Schwartz, of course, was a huge advocate for sharing of knowledge. And if you don't know who he is, I will definitely recommend just at least look at his Wikipedia page, but just follow him as a person, Aaron Schwartz. He's a remarkable gentleman who was taken from this world far too young. So... yeah, I guess I've been thinking quite a lot about, you know, the role that technology plays in our lives on, I guess, a societal and almost spiritual level as well. But I think a lot of the thoughts that I have probably been had throughout history, and yet here we are, and yet we persevere. I honestly, I don't know what to make about this. I think this might in many ways just be the kind of quandaries people have when they reach a certain age. I do not consider myself old. I'm the youthful age of 33, but I do have more than a few grey hairs, and it does feel like the world is moving at a pretty fast pace. Of course, the radio, once invented, took quite some time to reach households, to reach most households. The television took a somewhat shorter time, computers took a shorter time still, and smartphones just seem to be with us overnight, and now it seems like everyone has them and act like they've always had them. And also, like, you take these Alexa devices and they just seem to have popped up out of nowhere. I think that technology is just racing us forward, and it's kind of a remarkable thing. But all of this technology, because of its driving force of corporations behind it, do seem to have a goal in mind that is not necessarily within our best interest, but rather to make us more loyal consumers and to make consumption within the system just more fluid and easier. A lot of the conveniences and direct benefits of a lot of smart devices seem to me, and again, this is just a feeling, this isn't, you know, logic or rationale or reason or anything like that, but it seems to me that it feels like a lot of these modern conveniences are the bait for a more sinister trap, that trap being to lure us deeper down the sort of the tunnel of unquestionable conformity to these big corporations, which seem to be powerful enough that they can even challenge states and governments, and certainly local authorities, and That's one of the reasons companies like Amazon get away with paying such little tax, is because that various constituencies and authorities are so desperate for employment opportunities in their area that they're willing to waive a lot of taxes to suit Amazon. And that's one of the reasons Amazon choose where they happen to be, and one of the reasons they do not like certain politicians in the US Senate. So there's that. I don't want to get too political, although this has been something of a political video, or maybe more philosophical, perhaps. And I'd like to hear thoughts from everyone else on this one, because, quite frankly, I do feel like I'm wrong. And I've been told I'm wrong. But I see what I see, and other people see what I see. And is this just, I don't know, part of getting old? I don't know. It's strange. I don't like to think of myself as so inflexible that I'd lose touch and be stubborn in my own ways. But it definitely seems like a lot of technology is being taken away from us, or the autonomy of a lot of technology is being taken away from us, and we are no longer driving the car, we are being driven. And to what extent all of these smart devices come into our lives, I think do affect our autonomy. A lot of people speak of the utopia of complete automation, the idea that robots and smart devices and everything will do everything we ever need, and basically no one will need a job. There might be a few people that need to keep the machines running, but they'll like doing it, or they'll get paid a lot to do it, or something to that effect. But I do hear a lot of utopic visions of a fully automated society in which everyone gets to live like a king. But I honestly don't know how I'd feel if life were that easy. Surely adversity is what makes us who we are. But it's an argument that can never truly be won, because you're kind of advocating that doing things the hard way for the sake of it being the hard way is good. No one's going to buy that. I mean, we live in a world where people will drive just a mile down the road when they could walk. Yes, it would take longer to walk, but, you know, the actual process of walking would make you a stronger, healthier person, but most people would choose to drive a car. And perhaps many people in society are fundamentally lazy and would embrace any lifestyle that makes their life easier. And I'm not always resistant to that. Like, I am certainly lazy on a lot of days of the week too. And like I say, my thinking could be old, it could be outdated, it could be conservative. And I'm regularly told I'm wrong, and I do kind of think I'm wrong, but I still don't fully understand why, because a lot of times I'm told that an easier life is better. And that more people with more stuff and a higher level of consumerism is better. And I don't know. So I believe I've said on this Gemcast a few times before that I'm a pretty ardent atheist, but as a kid I did go to a religious school, and I live in a religious community, and I know a lot of people who are involved in the local churches. So it's not necessarily something that I'm antagonistic about. It's just I believe what I believe, and everyone is entitled to their belief system, and that's all good. But one of the things about Christianity I always thought was quite interesting was the idea of Lent. Now, of course, Lent takes after the sacrifice that Jesus made going into the desert. But, of course, it is now paid homage to by Christians around the globe by giving up something through the course of Lent. And I kind of find this idea interesting insofar that you decidedly suffer for your faith. You give up something to acknowledge that your faith is somehow worth suffering for. And I actually believe in this quite, as a principle, I believe in it quite sincerely. I, in some ways, kind of feel that if you're not willing to suffer for what you believe in, do you really, truly believe in it? Or are you just saying that you like it, right? It's easy to say that you believe in anything, but if you're not willing to sacrifice any part of you to push that idea forward, then do you believe in it? It's easy to say, do you believe in a better world? But if you're not taking a single step to make a better world, are you just saying, well, you'd rather just like to see a better world? I guess what I'm fundamentally saying is that talk is cheap. It's easy to say the right things, to, you know, pretend to be righteous, but if you're not willing to take a single step to validate those words, then that's all they'll ever be, words. It's like people who get all in a fuss about being the most righteous person on Twitter while at the same time doing nothing else. And Twitter, as we all know, is a bit of a bubble. In fact, one thing about Twitter that I learned about today is that it's not really growing as a platform. And when a platform like that doesn't grow but still needs to maintain its corporate value, it will find ways to collect value from the assets that it already has. And when I say assets, I mean users, people. And that means building in functions and interfaces and user experience to make that platform more addictive. And that's pretty insidious, really. But if you think about it, as a company that has to maintain its value, it has no other choice, especially if it's not getting new users in. It has to find a way to get more value out of its existing users. It's got to find more ways to exploit you. And yeah, of course, we all had a laugh when they suggested about bringing in paid for tweets, as if anyone in the world would pay for a tweet. But I think that just tips their hand a little bit. And I think it demonstrates that they're looking to accrue more value out of the people that use that platform. And if they're not going to do it monetarily, they're going to do it somehow in another way. So I think I'm rambling a fair bit now. And I would like to just remind you all that I'm almost certainly wrong. And I'm almost certainly exhibiting some kind of signs that I'm getting stuck in my ways, or that I'm fearing change. But I believe that, you know, all progress should be questioned, and that not all progress is good progress. I mean, if all progress was good progress, I would presume that we would be living in a much more sustainable society that treated the environment in a better way. But that's just my thoughts, and like I said, almost certainly wrong. So anyway, I'd like to finish off today's talk with an email that was actually sent in with Trendy Talk. No, it wasn't just Trendy Talk in mind. This is by, it isn't actually necessarily signed by, yeah. So this is by, Toby, Kurian. And they sent an email, to myself, for possible use in either the Aprilcast or Trendy Talk. And I thought this was really kind of amazing. So I thought I'd just read it out. Hi Chris, just letting you know that I am enjoying your Aprilcasts and Trendy Talk. Have listened to all of them. I have in fact made an OGG player using a Pimeroni Pirate Audio HAT and Raspberry Pi. In part because I wanted a portable music player to play OGG format that your podcasts use. I gave up my smartphone for a dumb phone, so that isn't an option. You mentioned an e-reader for reading Gemini. This is something I thought about and I blogged about here on tobycurian.com/articles/gemini-epaper.gmi. That's of course a Gemini address. The TLDR is that I think the M5 paper device would make a great pocket Gemini e-reader, but I'm currently using a Kindle to read Gemini by using the built-in experimental browser to connect to a proxy server on a Raspberry Pi. Which I think is really quite remarkable. I've got the photograph that was sent over here, and yes, it is just a something like a pirate audio device here that's attached to a Raspberry Pi. I assume that's like pirate is in like a brand or like a thing, kind of like reminiscent of pirate radio, which is I think I kind of you know, romanticize things like Trendy Talk and April Cast to be a little bit like we're a little bit anti-establishment, a little bit punk in that regard. And I think that's really kind of cool. So definitely fitting in that regard. Awesome, cool device there. I appreciate you sending that in. That's really kind of cool. I love that. And the reason that I read that out is because it's demonstrating the benefits of understanding how technology is put together. I have never usually been a car person, right? They're not something that interests me. But when I bought my first car, when I became a journalist, I expected not to become a car person. And I still would say not say that I'm a car person. But about a week into owning my first car, the battery crapped out on me. And I looked under the hood and I realized that it was not a very good battery. You could see from the actual look of the battery, it was one of the, it almost looked like it was a temporary stopgap battery that you might get given on the side of the road that will get you to the nearest garage to get it fixed up properly type of battery. So I went around to a very low, to a local store that did car batteries, and I had a chat with one of the staff there. And he was very, very kind enough to tell me about car batteries. Like, we spent quite some time talking about the cranking amps and, you know, how a car battery, how some car batteries are better if you use a car regularly or not so regularly and all that kind of stuff. And I ended up, getting a car battery and he showed me how to fit it even, which was really, like, tremendous service. And it kind of got me thinking along the lines of technology is that even though I'm not hugely interested in cars, there is a real benefit here to like learning how my car works, learning what components I can switch out for better ones so that I'm less likely to break down. Cause I would, you know, no one likes breaking down on the side of the road. About a year later, maybe even longer than a year later, I hit some debris that fell off a truck and it dented one of my wheels. It was quite an ordeal, I can tell you. And it actually dented the alloy rim. So I had to replace the whole wheel. And I knew that it would cost a fair bit if I just took it to a garage and asked them to fix it. So I looked around on the internet and I looked around on eBay and I managed to find that someone was scrapping a KA, which is the car that I drive. And they had the wheels. And so I managed to get a wheel for a bargain. And then I matched up all the reference numbers that I could see and all that kind of stuff. And it was the right type of wheel and it was at a good price. And I was lucky the tire was actually still good on it as well. So I didn't even have to switch the tire over or anything like that. And I brought it, and I bought it and it came and I, did the pressure, you know, I did the pressure myself and put the air in the tire and all that kind of stuff. And I even, you know, I changed the wheel myself. In fact, I bought a trolley jack. And I recommend anyone with a car to actually get a proper trolley jack. You can get them on the internet for about like 30 to 40 quid. They work on like basically any car, right? You know, when you buy like a scissor jack, it'll tell you certain makes of car that it works with. But a good trolley jack will work on just like basically any type of car or van, right? They're a bit bigger apparatus, right? And I do keep mine in the boot of my car just in case, right? But it's much more secure to raise a car up with. And also, if you happen to be with someone else who needs a jack, you can use it on them, you know, use it on their car. It's a really useful tool. And I use that to actually then switch out the tire. And that's like a really nice, you know, tool to use. And then I started getting more and more into it. And there are some things that I will, of course, take my car to a professional. There is, you know, sometimes when it comes to fitting particular rubber sleeves and stuff like that, that's just something that I don't want to mess up, right? And when sometimes certain rubber components perish and all that kind of stuff. But in regards, when it comes to things that I can do, I have definitely felt more empowered to actually try things myself, because learning how something works then allows me to know how to fix it when something goes wrong. And sometimes that will mean seeking out someone that knows more than me to teach me, and that's useful too. And that's, you know, that's great. But I truly value the knowledge that I can accrue through whatever means I can, because it does give me a sense of autonomy and ownership over my life. That's something of a life lesson there, I guess, or something that I feel like I've grown and learned outside of the realm of computers. In a future Aprilcast, I've jotted down some notes for ideas for future Aprilcasts, and thank you for those of you who have been sending in your ideas. There are some great ideas there that I'm going to be working through too. But one of my interesting ideas is the idea of open source in areas that don't involve computers. So I'm going to do an Aprilcast on that. Did I just refer to it as a video game? I can't remember now. Sometimes I refer to these videos because old habits die hard. But yeah, yeah, open source exists within many facets of our lives, and that's an example of the spirit of open source being with us in other places. Learning how the world around us works, I believe, is a valuable skill, and I think that a lot of modern technology seeks to obfuscate the workings of the world, and I think that that can make us more dependent on corporate technologies. But again, I'm regularly told I'm wrong on that one. So thank you very much for everyone who sends emails through, who gets in touch through the Fediverse and all that kind of stuff. It's genuinely appreciated, and quite frankly, the comments that I receive, all of the comments I receive are better than what come through on YouTube. And I don't think that's a fault of the people who watch me on YouTube. I think that's a difference in the medium itself, right? I think that having a little comment section beneath a YouTube video just makes it so easy to just fire off an idle thought. And when those thoughts are so easy to fire off, I think it perhaps then saturates the market and then disincentivizes thoughtful people to present their ideas. Now, I get thoughtful comments in the YouTube comment section quite regularly, but I definitely get more through email and I get more through the Fediverse, because I think that extra step that people take is a great process to stimulate thought. I think it gives people just a moment to think about what they want to say, and then it often grows and develops into something that I think is really quite meaningful. That's just my hypothesis on that one. But it's, I think that, I definitely enjoy doing these Aprilcasts, and a big reason for that is because of the wonderful feedback I get from you folks. It truly warms my heart, in ways that, that I have trouble describing. But yes, thank you for joining me today. This has been somewhat of a spiritual, philosophical approach to, free software and technology in our lives, but one that my mind seems to hang on. And I certainly don't ever want to tell anyone how to think or how to approach things or how to feel about anything. I'm really today just sharing some of my thoughts on the situation. Feel free to agree. Feel free to disagree. It's all good. Like I say, I'm not hugely confident in my own thoughts on this particular part of the subject. And a lot of it is just how I feel. And I think nowadays, I don't know, it doesn't seem very cool to have feelings, I guess. I don't know. Again, maybe that's just a sign of being old. I don't know. Anyway, thank you for joining me. It's a pleasure as always. And until next time, I've been Chris Ware, and you've been awesome. Toodaloo.